In addition to the process of mourning and self-forgiveness, another aspect of self-compassion I emphasize is the energy behind whatever action we take. When I advise, don't do anything that isn't play, some take me to be radical, even insane. I earnestly believe, however, that an important form of self-compassion is to make choices motivated purely by our desire to contribute to life, rather than out of fear, guilt, shame, duty, or obligation. When we are aware of the life-serving purpose behind the actions that we take, when the sole energy that motivates us is simply to make life wonderful for ourselves and others, then even hard work or scary work has an element of play in it. Correspondingly, an otherwise joyful activity performed out of obligation, duty, fear, guilt, or shame will lose its joy and eventually engender resistance. I earlier suggested that we consider replacing language that implies lack of choice with language that acknowledges choice. Many years ago, I engaged in an activity which significantly enlarged the pool of joy and happiness available to my life, while diminishing depression, guilt, and shame. I offer it here as a possible way to deepen our compassion for ourselves, to help us live our lives out of joyous play, by staying grounded in a clear awareness of the life-enriching need behind everything we do. The first step. What do you do in your life that you don't experience as playful? List it on a piece of paper. All of those things that you tell yourself you have to do. List any activity you dread but do it anyway because you perceive that you have no choice. When I first reviewed my own list, just seeing how long it was gave me insight as to why so much of my time was spent not enjoying life. I noticed how many things in an ordinary day I was doing by tricking myself into believing that I had to do them. The first item on my list was write clinical reports. I hated doing these reports, yet I was spending at least an hour of agony over them every day. My second item was driving the children to school twice a week when it was my turn to carpool the children. The next step, after you complete these lists of the things that you're doing that you don't like to do, clearly acknowledge to yourself that you were doing these things because you choose to do them, not because you have to do them. Insert the words, I choose to, in each item. So, in my case, it would be, I choose to write clinical reports. I choose to drive the children twice a week to school. I recall my own resistance to this step. I didn't want to admit to myself that I chose to write the clinical reports. I kept telling myself, no, I don't choose to do. I have to do it. I'm a clinical psychologist. Step three. After having acknowledged that you have chosen to do a particular activity, get in touch with the intention behind the choice by completing the statement, I choose to, and put in what the action is that you are doing that you don't like. In my case, I choose to write clinical reports. Then follow it with, because I want, and then fill in what comes after that. At first, I fumbled to identify what I wanted from writing clinical reports. Several months earlier, I had already determined that the reports did not serve my clients enough to justify the time they were taking. So why was I continuing to invest so much energy in their preparation? Finally, I realized that I was choosing to write the reports solely because I wanted the income they provided. As soon as I recognized this, I never wrote another clinical report. I can't tell you how joyful I feel just thinking of how many clinical reports I haven't written since that moment 35 years ago. When I realized that money was my primary motivation, I immediately saw that I could find other ways to take care of myself financially. In fact, I realize I'd rather scavenge in garbage cans for food than to write another clinical report. The next item on my list of unjoyful tasks was driving the children to school. When I examined the reason behind that chore, however, I felt appreciation for the benefits my children received from attending their school. They could have easily walked to the neighborhood school, but their own school that I was sending them to was far more in harmony with my educational values. So I continued to drive them, but with a different energy, instead of saying, "Oh, darn, I have to drive the kids to school today." Being conscious that my purpose was for my children to have a quality of education that was very dear to me, I did the driving with a different energy. Of course, I sometimes needed to remind myself two or three times during the drive to refocus my mind on what purpose my action was serving. As you explore the statement, "I choose to," and then fill in what you did that you didn't like, and then you add to it, "because I want," and then you get clear why you are doing it, you may discover, as I did with the children in their carpool, the important values behind the choices you've made. I'm convinced that after we gain clarity regarding the need being served by our actions, we can experience them as play even when they involve hard work, challenge, or frustration. For some items on your list, however, you might uncover one or several of the following motivations. One, for money. Money is a major form of extrinsic reward in our society. Choices prompted by a desire for reward are costly. They deprive us of the joy in life that comes with actions grounded in the clear intention to contribute to a human need. Money's not a need, as I define it. It is one of the countless strategies that may be selected to address a need. Second, for approval. Like money, approval from others is a form of extrinsic reward. Our culture has educated us to hunger for reward. We attended schools that used extrinsic means to motivate us to study. We grew up in homes where we were rewarded for being good little boys and girls and punished when our caretakers judged us to be otherwise. Thus, as adults, we easily trick ourselves into believing that life consists of doing things for rewards. We are addicted to getting a smile, a pat on the back, people's verbal judgments, to hear that we are a good person, good parent, good citizen, good worker, good friend, etc. We do things to get people to like us and avoid things that may lead them to dislike or punish us. I find it tragic that we work so hard to buy love and assume that we must deny ourselves and do for others in order to be liked. In fact, when we do things solely in the spirit of enhancing life, we will find others appreciating us. Their appreciation, however, is a feedback confirming that our efforts had the intended effect. The recognition that we have chosen to use our power to serve life and have done so successfully brings us the genuine joy of celebrating ourselves in a way that approval from others by itself can never offer. Third, to escape punishment. Some of us pay income tax primarily to avoid punishment. As a consequence, we are likely to approach that yearly ritual with a degree of resentment. I recall, however, in my childhood how differently my father and grandfather felt about paying taxes. They had immigrated from Russia to the United States and were desirous of supporting a government they believed was protecting people in a way that the Tsar had not. Imagining the many people whose welfare was being served by their tax money, they felt earnest pleasure as they sent their checks to the United States government. When I saw that I was paying taxes during the Vietnam War, I didn't have that joy. I saw my money being used in ways that I wasn't comfortable with, and I found a way of avoiding giving the money for taxes. I gave the money to charitable purposes that I enjoyed supporting and learned to live on a poverty income so I wouldn't be taxed. Next, to avoid shame. there may be some tasks we choose to do just to avoid shame. We know that if we don't do them, we'll end up suffering severe self-judgment, hearing our own voice telling us how there is something wrong or stupid about us. If we do something stimulated solely by the urge to avoid shame, we will generally end up detesting it. Next, to avoid guilt. In other instances, we may think, oh, if I don't do this, people will be disappointed in me. We're afraid we'll end up feeling guilty for failing to fulfill others' expectations of us. There's a world of difference between doing something for others in order to avoid guilt and doing it out of a clear awareness of our own need to contribute to the happiness of other human beings. The first is a world filled with misery. The second is a world filled with play. Out of duty. When we use language which denies choice, for example, words such as should, have to, ought, must, can't, supposed to, and so on, our behaviors arise out of a vague sense of guilt, duty, or obligation. I consider this to be the most socially dangerous and personally unfortunate of all the ways we act when we're cut off from our needs. I earlier discussed how the concept of Amtssprache allowed Adolf Eichmann and his colleagues to send tens of thousands of people to their deaths without feeling emotionally affected or personally responsible. When we speak a language that denies choice, we forfeit the life in ourselves for a robot-like mentality that disconnects us from our own core. Now, if you make this list that I'm suggested and get clear why you are doing these things, that you choose to do it because you want something, and you get clear why it is that you're doing it, you may decide to stop doing certain things in the same spirit that I chose to forego clinical reports. As radical as it may seem, I believe it is possible to do things only out of play. I believe that to the degree that we engage moment by moment in the playfulness of enriching life, motivated solely by the desire for its enrichment, to that degree we are being compassionate with ourselves, and life is play. Many times people